Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David and Jay will sit down and visit with Dr. Katie Van Balen, Beef Extension Specialist for the University of Kentucky, to discuss the upcoming Beef Bash. Our weekly topic will be feeding the cow herd during the wintertime, and as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, David.
Hey, Jay. How are you this morning?
Doing very well. I said it off air, but it seems like it's a month since I've sat down and done one of these things with you.
So. Well, you've been gone, and summertime has hit the late summer, and it's gotten really busy, and, you know, it's just one of them deals that you – the good thing about the three of us doing them is that we don't always have to all be here. We can do one or two of us, and we can get by, and it's not near as much fun with just the two of us, but we'll see if we can't hold it between the ditches.
That's exactly what I was fixing to say. I don't think you or Vicky or I realized when we started this thing that three of us doing it was going to be so important, because any of the one of us can and have been gone at different times, and the other two can just take it and keep on going. And we're kindly doing that today. Vicky's out and taking care of things at home, so we'll have her back next time. But
I hope so. Yep.
We do have three people, though.
Yes, we do.
Just not Vicky. Dr. Katie Van Balen is our guest today. She's with the University of Kentucky, a beef extension specialist located out of Princeton. So, Katie, glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on our show. It's something we've been doing about a year now, and we've had a pretty good mix, David, of agronomic topics and forage-related topics as well as animal science-related topics.
Absolutely.
So, glad you could be here and carry that animal science torch during
this time.
Somebody needs to, right?
That's right.
So, first of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been with UK, and all the ins and outs of that.
Yeah, so I've been with UK almost 3 years, which doesn't really seem possible, but in the last 3 years, a lot has happened in the world, and I've spent a lot of time talking to my computer screen, way more than I ever thought I would. I have not been out in some counties that I probably thought I'd get to, but I've been the beef specialist at Princeton for the last 3 years almost, and help oversee the cow herd that we have there. And, the last year I've been overseeing the recovery and rebuild process as we work to rebuild that station.
That's right. And as most of you know, the station that she's talking about rebuilding is the Grain and Forage Crop Center of Excellence there in Princeton, as we've just always called it, the experiment station in this part of the state. But it did take a direct hit, probably the most direct hit in that Princeton area during the December 10th tornadoes that tore through West Tennessee and Western Kentucky. So I know that's been a big, big part of your job since December, as it has mine too, living in Hopkins County. I've had quite a bit of work that was pushed to the side just so I could take on tornado related duties. So we appreciate all your efforts with that and all that's entailed. And you might talk a little bit about what part of that's entailed.
I was going to say, kind of give us a little update on kind of where we're at right now, and because I know we had a little storm come through and hit us again, if I'm not mistaken, but kind of give us an update on where we're at. So,
of course, our main building is gone. Most of our main buildings are gone. And so right now everything's kind of down to foundations, and we are working through the process to figure out what gets built back and where it gets built back. And, you know, we're almost 100-year-old station. And so there were things there that, you know, we had an old dairy barn that we were using for seed storage. And so, you know, that probably doesn't get built back exactly like a dairy barn. I have no interest in milking cows and bringing dairy cattle back to the station.
I've done it. I don't either.
And so, you know, just in at the beef unit, kind of up the hill, it almost could have done a little more damage to some of those buildings, because it was a back and forth about, are they repairable? Are they not repairable? Some of those buildings really weren't serving us in the best way that they could. Mm-hmm. And so we are finally getting to a point where we are maybe seeing a path forward to rebuilding some of those things. Fencing, we still are getting the perimeter fence put back on. We lost, I think, almost 6 miles of fence. That's a big undertaking. Yeah. And so the perimeter is almost done, and then they'll come back in and start the interior fencing. Mm-hmm. And so eventually we will have all of our pastures back. I mean, we have pastures we haven't been in since December.
Just the amount of debris, part of that reason is just the amount of debris that was probably from the main station that, mm-hmm. that was in those fields.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was a solid 3 month effort of just, boots on the ground, going out, walking through all those fields. There's really not a piece of equipment that can do that for you. And I mean, I wish we could have found a easier solution for folks that will have to deal with this in the future, but
yeah.
You can't really replace boots on the ground and just going through and picking it up.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we saw that all across West Kentucky. Mm-hmm. We certainly saw it in Muhlenberg County and Hopkins County in and around that Dawson Springs, all the way to the Parkway where the tornado tore through. Nothing at all could replace the amount of volunteers, not just from the standpoint of volunteering and being willing to help, but the boots on the ground that could mm-hmm. line up in formation and walk across the field so that you didn't miss some of that debris.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there was some of those fields we went over multiple times, and you thought, well, man, we did a really good job the first time. And then mm-hmm. you went back over them and was like, how did we miss all this? And, and even then when we went to Belle Hay this year, we tore up a brand new baler because we still had debris, and that hay has debris in it. And so that's been a challenge. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, and you know, especially as we got into the springtime and pastures began to grow, that makes it all that much more difficult, especially for the smaller pieces that you are more likely to miss on those extra pastures.
And you'll be finding those, my guess is you'll be finding those in those rolls of hay for quite some time.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just part of it.
Yep. You know. Absolutely.
You using a metal detector before you put that roll of hay out is going to be a big thing. We did some of that in Hopkins County actually last winter with some barred metal detectors, and I hope it works. You could find stuff that was on the surface. You never found anything that was more than 6 inches deep in a bale, so you wonder what's deeper into that bale.
Yeah.
For the folks who do some unrolling of hay, that's probably the best way to uncover it.
Yeah, and we have a bale processor, and so we're going to, process any of that hay that we can and put a magnet on that and try to pull out what we can that way, because, again, you just don't know what's in there. We actually purchased in hay this year, which is not something we typically do, but we just
for that reason.
For that reason, to try to limit the risk of hardware disease and causing, further damage. We've really been lucky with the cow herd and how they've come through this. So we want to try to continue to limit the risk to those cattle.
Dr. Van Valen, didn't y'all send some cattle that were there? Didn't you send some to Lexington? How did those cattle, how did they make it through it? I mean, was a breeding a big deal? I know y'all are fall calving.
Yep.
And so how did they stay bred? Did they, what happened, just for a learning experience for some folks listening?
So the mature cows never left. They were in at the research center the whole time. And they actually bred exceptionally well. We had actually bred the entire herd AI the morning of the tornado. But with the younger cows, when they went up, our first calf heifers and our developing heifers, we sent them up to Lexington, just because those are the females on the farm that require a little extra attention, and we really didn't have the resources to do that. And so, they went up there, and, we're doing some research with a new, double AI process. And so by the time it was all said and done, after two rounds of AI, they were pretty good. But after that first round, they did not do as well as the cows that had stayed.
Well, that was going to be my question. The cows that did stay, if you know right offhand, what percentage of those settled off of that breeding? I guess that was the morning of the 9th, that Friday morning?
Yep, the morning of the 10th or whatever what that Friday was. I can't remember off the top of my head what our numbers were, but they were pretty pretty in line with what we've seen over the last couple of years, and nothing too out of, you know, mm-hmm. out of the realm of what we would typically see in our herd. But yeah, those younger females, it did take them that second round to mm-hmm. get bred. And I do think that's really more of a, it was almost a week maybe later when they left. And so that timing was almost worse than sure. than had yeah. the tornado happening right there. Because even within the cow herd, some groups were more affected than others, you know, in terms of where they were at on the farm.
Yeah.
And but we really didn't see a whole lot of differences when it came to conception rates. So
yep.
we were pretty thankful for that.
Yeah. And you would think that those younger cattle would have a little harder time getting through that mm-hmm. whole process than some of those older cows for sure.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, fortunately, our bulls were not affected. So, I mean, that would have obviously been a bigger issue had we, you know, had sure. bulls that were injured or, you know, or that we lost in the storm coming right into breeding season, sure. that could have been a big issue for us. But, fortunately where they were at, they were unharmed. So,
yep. Well, that's good. What facilities do we have left? What are we still using? And, you know, kind of, you know, as we kind of lead into the beef bash and talking about that, what facilities are there left there, on the station?
So there are a few barns that are still standing over kind of across 91 where some of the tobacco mm-hmm. research and stuff is conducted. They've got a few barns left over there. When you come in the main driveway, there was a large craftsman style home. There was a red brick building, the original research center building. That is all gone. That's down to foundations. Mm-hmm. You know, as you kind of drive back through, you'll notice that we have some new temporary structures put up for offices and for equipment storage. And you'll still see a small portion of the main building is still standing, but eventually that will come down as well. Mm-hmm. And so then as you kind of head up the hill towards the beef unit, you'll notice we used to have three silos, and we used to tell folks, hey, look for the silos. That was your point. We have two still standing, and those are going to be coming down. So we'll have to figure out a new thing for people to look for when they come up the hill, because our silos will be gone. Both of the ones that are still standing are damaged pretty heavily.
Yep.
We lost a barn. Up there, we have another barn up there, an older wood-sided barn that's got quite a bit of damage. So eventually that will be coming down as well. Then we have our main feeding barn where we do our research out of, this, mm-hmm. that's called the steer barn. It lost its roof in the tornado and was actually the very first building that had been fully repaired after the tornado. It got new roof, new siding. It looked like a brand new barn on the outside. And then about a month later, I got a text message that said at 6:30 a.m. from my herd manager that said, are you ready for the bad news of the day? And that's never a good way to start your day. And she said, the roof is back off the steer barn. And,
yeah.
you know, so we had another just wind storm come through. And that was really the only damage was to that barn.
Right.
And the roof. I remember driving down from, I live in Madisonville, so I had about a half hour drive to get there. And I remember thinking, well, you're going to get there. It's not going to be that bad. And then I got there and it was that bad. So luckily our crew is well versed in picking up debris. And so we had the field cleaned up in about 30 minutes. Had, you know, the cows were already checked on because it blew debris out into a pasture that had cows in it. They were fine. And so it's the roof will still be off that barn, I'm sure, when beef bash rolls around. Yeah. So you'll see that damage. And then back where we hold beef bash, that little old working facility that's back there, it's still kind of standing. It weathered the storm. And so we're not really using it at the time because it's not fully sound. But you'll still see it there. And really, in terms of working facilities, we were really fortunate that AeroQuip stepped up and donated a portable handling facility to us. And that has been a lifesaver for us. How we have worked those cattle, and it's been super handy to have. It's a It's got a bud flow tub and then run into a squeeze chute. It's got a set of scales that you can add onto it. And so that's what we've used since the tornado mm-hmm. to work cattle, because all of our other handling facilities have been condemned in, you know, some form or fashion or completely destroyed. Right. So, yeah, it's there's a lot of damage, but
yep.
it, you know, eventually it'll get rebuilt and I think be even more functional for us.
Yep.
Yeah, I would think that we could make an entire show out of just thanking the amount of partners who have stepped yeah. up along yep. this way
yep.
And done things for us. Both in the western part of the state where we experienced the tornado and now in the eastern part of the state where our substation in Breathitt County in that Jackson, Kentucky area, Quicksand to be exact, was heavily damaged in the floods this summer. So
yeah,
all
taking a pretty good hit this year.
I was going to say, I guess it's just all in a year, but yes. yeah, as yeah. far as UK research goes,
yeah.
and you know, they were trying to get some beef research off the ground there at Quicksand even, and that's something that's going to have to take a back seat for a little while mm-hmm. just because of the lack of facilities. Yeah. I was able to tour that facility. I made a donation run to the eastern part of the state like so many of those guys did with us during the tornado. And Daniel Wilson, director of the station there in the East Region 1 director, was able to take me around and tour me around that facility and show me what all had gone on. So it's a pretty good hit for a year, yeah. for yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned the beef bash. I guess it's before too long. We're going to need to be talking more about that, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on now. So if you want to, just tell us a little bit about what's coming up.
Yeah, so Beef Bash is going to be held at the Research Center on Thursday, October 20th. And, you know, for a long time, we weren't sure if we would even be able to have Beef Bash there this year. But I looked back and realized that we had not had an in-person Beef Bash in Princeton since 2018 is what I came up with. So I thought it was time that we get something back and mm-hmm. Things are going to look different around there and it's not going to be exactly the same as it always has been because we just have limited resources. But we're going to have Beef Bash and we're going to come together and have an opportunity to learn from, you know, the things that we have been working on over the last couple of years in the beef extension and research group. And then also, you know, have opportunities to visit with, you know, fellow beef producers and we'll have some of our vendors will be there like we've had in the past. And so it'll still, I think, have a Beef Bash feel, but like it's going to be different. I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, you can't help but see the damage and destruction yeah. all around. So.
And, you know, maybe that's a good thing. Folks need to see what we're working with, what you specifically and other mm-hmm. specialists there at Princeton are working with, because so many of you, because of our lack of facilities, are working out of a car or a truck right now.
Yeah. yeah.
And I think most people know that,
mm-hmm.
but to know it and to see it are two different things.
Yeah. Yeah. And Beef Bash is always been, I mean, it's our biggest beef event that the Beef Extension Group puts on. And it was, you know, always every other year. And now we've started to do it every year, going back and forth between Western Kentucky and Central Kentucky. And so I kind of set that as my goal earlier this spring, that let's get to a point where we can do this fall. And knowing that it may look a little different, but that's okay. We can be flexible. And so, you know, in years past we had wagons and tours and things like that. And this year everything will be right within walking distance. And, mm-hmm. Cause we don't have the capacity to do wagon tours and things mm-hmm. like that. So,
right.
And there's not as much to show you anymore. Yeah. So,
but you know, y'all are still carrying on the research. I mean, there's a lot of research that's still taking yeah. place on the research center. Just it's not easily accessible like it used to be and,
mm-hmm.
and that type thing, but we're still, the work is carrying on regardless of whether it's at the research center or somebody's private farm. Y'all are still working really hard trying to help folks.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look over, you know, across 91, a lot of times you can kind of look at that and say, man, that kind of just looks like a normal year. We got the crops in the ground. They got the plots up and going and that was great. You know, the beef side, we've been a little bit, you know, slower because we didn't have fences, so we had no way to,
it's a little harder.
To get cattle divided up in their groups and things like that. So we've been delayed probably more than any other program out there, but the cows are still there. You know, we've got some long-term selenium research that we've been doing there. So we have two groups of cows that are maintained on two different mineral supplements. And for the, with the exception of like the first 48 hours after the tornado, we've kept those groups separate. And kept their, that program going. So that's kind of been the bare minimum goal is let's at least just keep those groups going.
Separate. Try to keep them separated.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, everybody has done just a tremendous job in doing that. It, you know, as far as the Beef Bash goes, that was maybe just right alongside the traditional field day that's always been held at Princeton, you know, the Crops Field Day.
Yep.
That, to me, has been more of a showcase for the western part of the state, animal science-wise, that we didn't always have. And since that was started, I don't remember the first year.
It's been a while.
I mean, it's been in our careers. We've seen all of them. But it's been one of those highlights that, that you always tried to make sure and get folks out to. For years, I was in Christian County, so I had a lot of folks that attended it. Hope to as well, now even being in Hopkins County, but notwithstanding the fact that we're going to get to do it in person this year, I think a lot of people, aside from the tornado issue and having to do it in a different type setting than what we have in the past, I think folks are just going to be anxious to get out and get back, you know, COVID and all the other reasons that we haven't met in such a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie, remind us of the date again and the time.
So Thursday, October 20th, and registration will start at 8:30 in the morning. The program will start at 9 a.m. You don't have to pre-register or anything like that. Just show up on the day of. There's no cost to attend Beef Bash, but we can do we will have a lunch available to purchase. And that proceeds from that lunch will go to the Caldwell Lion Cattlemen's Association, their scholarship program. Yeah. So
good deal.
Yep.
Yeah. So invite everybody out October the 20th, starting early that morning, 8 o'clock, 8:30 in that neighborhood. We'd love to have you come out and be a little different. And I hope you have the AeroQuip thing set up because I'd like to see the Bud Box thing working.
Yes.
And see how that works. But, you know, that'd be a great thing to be able to see. Along those lines, Dr. Van Valen, let's talk a little bit about feeding the cow herd this winter. We've got some challenges right now in our part of the state, and it's a little bit drier than it is in other parts, and it's kind of been that way all year. We're recording here in Webster County, and they've had some rain that we never got there in southern Christian County, Trigg County, down in that area. It's pretty dry down there, and it's gotten dry again. So those of us trying to do a little stockpiling is not working out too good. But talk with us a little bit about some things that maybe we can do to help us feed the cows this winter.
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenging year when we think about, hey, quality and quantity, even at this point with how dry it's been. So one of the things that I promote every year, but especially in a year like this, is getting your hay tested. I mean, that's the basis of any of feeding the cows, is knowing where we're starting and what we've got. Because, you know, I tell folks all the time is I can go get a load of distillers or a load of corn, and I'm going to be in a pretty tight ballpark of what those things are going to test over time, right? You're going to have a little fluctuation, but not much. Forage is, that's a mile wide. It depends on what species you have out there, when you harvested. I mean, there's so much variation in quality that it's really important to understand what you have. My favorite is folks will tell me, well, I know it's not any good, so I don't want to test it. But I guess we got to know exactly how bad is it, right? You know, and so because we can plan ahead and make sure that we feed the right hay to the right animal at the right time. That's what I always tell folks. That's why we do this. And, you know, if you look at supplement feed costs right now, that's not a fun topic to talk about either.
I don't know if anybody's bought any feed lately, but it is. We just bought a load of feed, and we were fixing to get ready to wean our calves, and I had to sit down. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I had to sit down. It was probably $120 higher than it was last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so that is more of a reason to test and know Absolutely. Exactly, you know, either using the UK Forage supplement tool or working with your county agent to get a program together so that we're not over supplementing anything, but that we're getting exactly what we need out there. You know, the other thing is don't just assume that you're going to feed the same feed you always have. I feel like we kind of get stuck in a rut of, well, I've always just thrown out a few pounds of gluten. Well, if you look at the feed prices right now, gluten's higher than dried distillers. And so by about $50 a ton. Yeah. And so, you know, doing a little thinking about what it is that we actually need, you know, energy and protein wise and matching those things up. And again, we've got resources and folks to help make that a simple process.
Sure.
And that can go a long way to cutting that feed bill just by making sure we put out the right supplement and not too right. much of it or too little of it. Because of course we get too little of it and then we run into issues next year. And so you may not necessarily see those problems this year immediately. Right. It's next year when you try to go wean those calves or get those yep. calves bred again. So,
and that's, you know, you talk about hay testing. I had a conversation with the producer first last week, I guess it was. And I told him, I said, right now we don't have a single reason to hay test. I said, we have every reason to hay test. Mm-hmm. Just like soil testing back last winter and spring, we talked mm-hmm. to people. There's not just one fixture that we're looking at in this equation. It's every fixture that we need to make sure is right. And it all begins with hay testing. I remember years ago in Christian County, we had a really, really dry year like this. And people were baling corn stover, you know, putting up mm-hmm. corn stalks to try to make some form of roughage. Producer called me late that fall. He said, you would not believe how good my cows look. He said, you need to stop by sometime. He said, all I'm using is the wet syrup from the ethanol plant and these baled corn stalks. He said, my cows look great. He said, what is the deal? And I said, well, the first thing, and he was a friend, I could tell him this. I said, the first thing it tells me is just how bad a hay you've been putting if your cows have gotten slick off syrup and corn stalks, we've yep. got an issue with your hay program.
Yep.
And I think you're exactly right. Folks get in a rut of just putting up whatever they have
mm-hmm.
and not figuring out all the ins and outs of working around yeah. it. So
I think it's really key, too, and I heard you say this, Dr. Van Valen, about feeding the right hay to the cows at the right time.
Yes.
I mean, right now, those of us that are spring calving cows have got those are dry. They should be dry cows or mm-hmm. about to be dry cows, mm-hmm. and we should be feeding our worst hay to them right now.
Absolutely.
You still need to know how bad it is, so yep. in case you do need to, because they do have minimum requirements
yep.
that you have to meet, but you still need to know how bad it is, but you need to be feeding that right now. You need to be feeding your best hay when they're calving
mm-hmm.
and when those cows are suckling those calves.
Yep, and so for our fall calving producers, just flip-flop that,
yeah,
right? We
absolutely.
Should be feeding the best right now, or if we put up any kind of silage or something like that, you know, that's something that I have some interest in looking into is, mm-hmm. you know, is feeding some silage in the fall to those cows. And you know, we always talk about feeding it in the winter, but,
yep. Yep.
you know.
It's been a little bit of concern of mine right now for those fall calving producers, because we typically think of the fall calving herd costing a little more to maintain anyway because of the time of the year we're trying to get them bred back. And this year, I think that's going to be compounded by the forage issues and availability
cost,
that we
yeah,
have right
feed
now.
Feed costs are just astronomical right now.
Folks are going to be wanting to, mm-hmm. to cut back on you know, feed fed just like yeah. they did fertilizer in the spring. And that's going to cost us, I feel like, in our cows being bred.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's what I always tell folks is you're playing the long game here, because again, you're not going to see an immediate effect of cutting that back, but you will notice it over time and really when it comes to yeah. your next calf crop. And so, you know, it's a tough place. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the reality of it is it's very expensive. And so doing everything we can to push that pencil and figure out what the most efficient way is, will go a long way. I do some calculations and presentations that I do all the time showing folks if you had three different kinds of hay, you know, lots of hay tested different ways, you know, and depending on what supplement you use, you're talking, you know, $100, $200
mm-hmm.
difference to maintain that herd you know, over a week or 2 weeks time, depending on the size of your herd, right, and what yeah. you're looking at. So it does ultimately make a difference when you're trying to figure out how to manage that bottom line.
Yeah. You know, I'll plug Kevin Laurent, and I did a study several years ago about dry lotting these cows, which my cows are in a dry lot right now, and how much weight gain. They gained like 130 pounds, and the hay was 10% protein and 51% TDN. And so you don't necessarily think that they would gain a lot of weight. You know, some people don't think that actually happens, but it actually happened, and they actually gained weight, which was a good thing. They were big enough already, you know, but they put on, I think it's an average of about 130 pounds. So they will gain weight. And right now is the time to put that weight on those cows. Mm-hmm. It's not right before they calve, and it's not while they've already calved.
Right.
It's right now is when you want to put that weight on those cows.
Exactly. That's why when we're weaning, I think it's really easy to focus on that calf, especially if we're going to be preconditioning that calf and focus on them. But that's also the time to take a look at the herd and see, you know, body condition score and pull out the thin ones if we can and feed them a little extra, maybe feed them a little bit better quality hay than everybody else. But like you said, that time when we wean that calf off, she's at her lowest, that cow is at her lowest energy and protein requirements she's going to have all year. So if we need to make a jump in body condition score, that is the time to do it, because it is almost impossible. I mean, I have tried to run the rations. Mm-hmm. It's practically impossible to get them once they're milking, especially some of these high milking breeds that we have out there. That's such an energy demand to produce milk that is definitely not the right time to try to make any changes in body condition.
Yeah, and I've got news for folks that are putting up hay right now that has a lot of broom sage in it, and if it looks like it's snowing when you're rolling hay, that hay's not very good, I hate to tell you. I mean, it may be a little fescue in there that's okay, but that broom sage is the nutritional value is not, it's non-existent.
Not, so right now it is exactly that. It's yeah, non-existent. Right. You know, when you're grazing it in the summer and there's a little bit there, but there's nothing there right now as far as nutrient value goes.
Yeah. So if you're feeding that kind of hay right now, you need to feed something else with it.
Mm-hmm.
It may be one of those kind of things that's better than a snowball, but it's no, not really, mm-hmm. You know, kind of deal. So, you know, those are the things that I try to tell folks. And, you know, on the stockpiling, you know, if you're dry lotting those cows, or if you've got those cows in a sacrifice pasture right now, feeding that hay on that some of the worst ground that you have is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
There's not anything wrong with that. Whether you're unrolling it or you're bale grazing or doing whatever you want to call it, those are some good ideas to take advantage of. And then also stockpiling that and maybe continuing the bale grazing throughout the winter, I think is something that I've kind of picked up on now, and we're kind of doing that now too. So it's worked good so far. We've got a year under our belt, so we'll see how that goes. But folks need to take advantage of those kind of programs.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things too that I always kind of remind folks about stockpiling, and this is the difference between an animal scientist and a forage specialist, fescue will stockpile without nitrogen.
Yes.
So now it will definitely stockpile more if we have the opportunity to put nitrogen down, but it's been really dry here and prices are high. So just recognize that you can still take advantage of some fall stockpile. We're not getting a whole lot right now because we need some moisture.
Yep.
But
yep.
If you've got parts of the farm where you can restrict those cows off of it right now, we will take advantage of some of that growth.
Shut the gate.
That's one of the simplest pieces of advice we can give, right? Is shut the gate and keep them off part of that. Yeah. And that will give you a decent supply, especially going into the early winter with those spring calving cows. That's stockpiled fescue holds its nutritive value really well. So it's a great opportunity, and you know, some is better than none.
Yeah,
well, some is better than none, and in a year like this, when we're looking at decreased hay inventories anyway,
mm-hmm.
That's another tool in the toolbox, so to speak, as far as making that hay last as far as it can, is just not having to feed.
Yeah, and the quality that you're having with the stockpiled and you're feeding your hay, I mean, that to me, that's the the best of both worlds, because you're getting a little longevity there with the hay there. It's making your pasture last a little longer, but they're getting the nutritional value that they need to maintain their weight as well. And you know, Dr. Teutsch has been on this program and talked about a lot of times if our fertilization is all correct and everything's good, that, and if you don't put nitrogen on in the fall, you still will get a good bit of growth from stockpiling, you know. So I encourage folks to do that. I mean, it's just, even if you don't put any nitrogen on, just look at, shut the gate and look at how much growth that you have between now and say sometime in the middle of December, and you know, just to give it a try. You know, I think folks will really like that.
And, you know, the other thing is, too, when you go to turn cows out on that, you know, trying to utilize a simple strip grazing program. So putting out a temporary electric fence that we move every few days and get, you know, start at your water source and work your way out. It's simpler than a rotational grazing system to do, because we start at the water source, so we don't have to worry about that water. And so, but trampling losses are a real thing. And so if we want to get them, you know, better utilization out of that forage that we are able to stockpile, that's another really useful tool when we do open the gate and turn the cows out on that.
Another thing that stockpiling is useful for is in help with weed control in the pasture. When you let that, when you keep cattle off and allow that fescue to become more vegetative, it can be more competitive than just about anything we have out there. And I did a little thing with a producer out on Princeton Road, that dairy, the guy that I used to work with there a lot over across from Fox Creek, he had a problem with buttercups in the spring, and I was talking about how he was grazing, you know, and he didn't really think that was it. And I said, well, let's just run a hot wire through the middle of the field and leave it. And within 3 weeks, you could tell the difference in there as far as the fescue growing goes. That was in the spring, but it's the same effect in the fall.
Yep.
Yeah, that the whole strip grazing thing, and people get all bent out of shape about how long it takes to put up fence and all this kind of stuff. And folks, within 2 or 3 hours, I can put up enough fence to last me a week and a half or 2 weeks. It's just that easy, you know, just with the you know, innovations and products that they have, a step-in post, the wire reels, the turbo wire, the wire, electric fence wire that you use, it's the poly wire stuff. I mean, it doesn't take but just a minute to roll that up. And when my kids were at home, it took me a lot less time, but it takes me a little while longer now that everybody has moved on. But, you know, it doesn't take but just a few minutes to do that. And, I mean, you know, from a standpoint of efficiency and so much better for those cows, and then you throw in the whole bale grazing things, to me, is kind of the perfect system that has worked out really well this last winter.
Using all the tools in the toolbox.
Absolutely. I mean, and with today's prices, you know, from a fertilization, you know, standpoint, from feed cost standpoint, I mean, it just makes sense to use all of these things and not do things like we always done them. Think outside the box a little bit to try to save yourself some money.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we're looking at with the fall calving herd at Princeton. We've always fed silage from January to March. That's just what we've done. And I have been wanting to make this change. This year was not the year to rock the boat anymore, so we didn't do it this year. But start feeding silage now when those cows are calving. We put up corn silage. We have the ability to do that pretty easily, and so feed it now. That's their highest protein and energy requirement. Let the rest of the farm stockpile, and then we move them on to stockpile after that. And then finally, at the end of the winter, now we're going to start feeding hay. And even by that time, even though those fall cows will still have a calf at her side, her energy and protein requirement has started to come down. She's out of that peak lactation. And so that is an easier system to supplement than feeding her hay now.
Drier now.
Yes.
It's easier to feed right now.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's so much easier to feed. If you drive through that farm in January or February where you've got the cows coming up to that feed bunk every single day, it's a mess.
Nasty. Yeah,
and so I'm hoping we're going to change one group at a time so we can actually record some data and make a research project out of this to actually show folks the change.
I know you said the silos were damaged. Are y'all putting it up in the bag?
We are.
Is that how that's going to work?
Yep. So we got a concrete pad poured they're in the process of pouring it. So this year the bags are out on grass, so it'll be a little bit of a mess for us this year. But moving forward, we'll go to a bag silage system. And Dr. Teutsch and I are pretty excited about that because that'll give us some opportunities to maybe do some cover crop research and things, we can do smaller bags and actually have research and opportunities with forages that we haven't had in the past. Because in the past, we just filled the silos. So,
and it's great to see that the forage folks and the beef folks are all working together. That makes things a lot better for all of us, you know, and for the people that we work with every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes things a lot better for them too, because y'all are on the kind of the cutting edge of the research that's going on, and you're trying to figure out ways to help them be more efficient and be more effective and try to save them money. I mean, and right now in today's time, that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, we're talking about all this work and the people that we do that work for. It kindly leads us right into our timely tip for this week. One of the things we do with each show is we try to give something that's pertinent to the time of the year we're operating in. And this week's timely tip for our producers is to attend an educational event to help broaden your knowledge about your cattle. One of the things that, you know, for us, it's that time, fixing to be that time of the year, our meeting season, where we're putting a lot of different meetings, and we're kindly, even with the Beef Bash coming, that's on the long end of the field day season. We're fixing to transition into that fall and winter meeting time. And we just encourage producers to get out, find something that you can learn from, find something that you can go to and something that will help improve your herd. After us going through what we did in 2020 and then that bleeding on into 2021, I think folks are anxious to get out and be a part. But we want them to be a lot more than just social events. We want you to come and learn, and that's why we do the things that we do. That's what all this research goes into, is to help you generate the knowledge that you need to make your operation a little more profitable. So anybody want to add to that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just think outside the box. We need to encourage folks to do that. And I mean, just because you've done something the way you've always done it doesn't mean it's the right way to go or the right thing to do. You know, explore some different options and try to be more efficient and try to put a little more of that green back in your pocket.
Right. Well, and I'll just add, you know, I think sometimes we're hesitant to change because that might maybe imply that we were wrong in the past. But understand that the research is evolving, our knowledge is growing and evolving. So just because we're doing it different than, you know, how granddad did it, wasn't necessarily that granddad was wrong. It's just that times have changed and we've got to, you know, we're in a little bit more of a competitive environment right now, and we've got to do everything we can to be able to keep that herd on our operation.
I think that's a really good point. We have a lot more tools. You know, if you think about granddad and that toolbox he used, he carried it around in one hand from truck to truck. I've got a big roll-around toolbox sitting in my shop right now. We're fortunate to have a lot more tools today to work with.
Absolutely.
And that's all a product of the years of research and work that's gone on at the university and at the corporate level. So, take advantage of what's out there and use what there is to use.
Yep.
So, well, we want to thank Dr. Van Valen for being our guest this week, and thank to our host for this week's information. Thanks also to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.